Shalom and welcome to Tel Aviv University's newest initiative, a series of podcasts with our leading friends and supporters. Hello everyone and welcome to our special podcast. Today we have a special guest, Mr. Sylvan Adams. He's the vice chairman of the Board of Governors of Tel Aviv University, second generation, great supporter of Tel Aviv University and the State of Israel, and I might say also the Jewish people. Sylvan, welcome.
Hi, Amos. Nice to be with you.
A pleasure having you with us today. Sylvan, I think you are a multi-time world champion in bicycling and many other things. And we are excited because you're doing so much for our university and, of course, for Israel. And I think it's a chance a little bit for our viewers and audience to hear and learn about yourself. Maybe to start, I remember maybe after you made Aliyah or after you came to Israel, I remember you told me, you showed me a card and you told me, you know, this is my title. And maybe you can share with the audience, what is this title and what does it mean for you?
Sure. So before I tell you about that, I'll tell you about my motivation to make Aliyah.
Please.
You know, I had this crazy idea, and I'm from Montreal, Canada. And one day I met my wife here in Israel in the 1980s. We're about to celebrate our 40th wedding anniversary. And I met her on a kibbutz. She's from England. She came, you know, we got married after our kibbutz experience. She came back to Canada with me. And, you know, so several years ago, on a cold, dark Montreal winter's night, I came home and I said to my wife, I asked my wife, Margaret, what do you think about moving to Israel? And she said two things. Number one, she said, I always thought we would end up there. And also, she said, it'll be an adventure. And she was right on both counts. And we made Aliyah on Christmas Day of 2015. And literally the week of our Aliyah, I had business cards printed with my new title, which reads, Self-appointed ambassador at large for the State of Israel. Yeah. And so that's what I've done. I've devoted this chapter of my life to promoting the Israel that I know and love, the Israel that is so misunderstood around the world because of the activities of the haters and also because of the media coverage here. You know, right now we happen to be at war. So I was, you know, when I used to tell the story, you know, the media portrays us as a war zone, and which is not the normal story. Even today, if you walk in Tel Aviv, we're a country at war, you would never know it because the restaurants are full. You can't get a reservation. You know, we're a normal Western democracy. And it's I like to say that I wouldn't have moved to a country that is less open, tolerant, pluralistic, fiercely democratic, of course, and safe, even though we're at war, safe than my native Canada. So it's really misunderstood. And so my projects, I did these very large scale projects to promote what I call normal Israel.
Normal is, it's a good definition. Normal is something.
Well, because we're a normal Western democracy. And as I said, it's poorly understood abroad.
Yeah. So basically, what would you say that we need to portray Israel? What are the ways that we should advance Israel? What are
things? So first of all, I think we're a very virtuous country. We are the, you know, Judaism is the foundation of the Judeo-Christian tradition, which the Western liberal society has developed. So we are literally the foundation of modern society. And we are also the startup nation. We created so many amazing inventions, including the cell phone that everybody has in their pocket. And as a matter of fact, if you take an Apple iPhone, we have probably 100 inventions that are Israeli inside that Apple phone. Sure. So we're leaders in desert management, in water management, in environmental science, in climate change, We are leaders in agri-tech and agricultural production. We're world leaders. We are the country with the second most listings on the NASDAQ after the United States. We are the startup nation. And as I said, you know, our Jewish roots, our Jewish philosophy is one which requires us to practice tikkun olam, which is, you know, repairing the world or improving the world. And so I think we're a very virtuous people, and Israel is our nation state, but it's the nation state of the Jewish people. We are one people.
I think you're absolutely correct. And, you know, you were mentioning before some of your major projects that you did for Israel. We talked about you brought Madonna to Israel and you brought here the Giro d'Italia, which is, I think, the second largest in the world. Amazing.
So the Giro is the second most important bike race after the Tour de France. We were seen on television, and it takes place outdoors. It was the first days of the 2018 edition, which was the 101st edition of the annual edition of the Giro d'Italia bike race. So it's a huge tradition. It's Italian, of course. And the first three stages out of the 21-stage bike race took place in Israel, and then it went to Italy. But Israel is so small that literally Giro means tour, like Tour de France. So in 3 days, we covered the whole country, and it's all aerial photography. It takes place outdoors. It's not inside a stadium. So we got to show the beauty of Israel to, believe it or not, 1 billion Amazing. Television spectators who got to see Israel for the first time. And I like to say that, you know, we had, let's call it 1 billion first-time visitors to Israel via their TV screens.
Amazing. And you know, when people talk about, you know, promoting Israel or being the, you know, talking about, you know, foreign ministry, whether they're doing ambassadors, consulates. I mean, this is really being an ambassador and making sure people will look at Israel in the right way. And I think you worked really hard to make it happen. It wasn't easy for you to bring them to Israel, did you, right? I mean, you worked hard for that.
The first time I mentioned it to the director of the Giro d'Italia, he thought I was joking. So he laughed. And so I said, look, I'm perfectly serious, and I'll tell you what. I'm inviting you. I will pay for your trip to Israel, and you'll see that we are a normal country, a beautiful country. You'll see that we even have a little bit of a cycling culture here. You'll see people riding on the roads Shabbat morning, and we have beautiful landscape, beautiful geography. And so he did come. And then it was a long saga of negotiations to try to bring the cost into a reasonable dimension.
I remember you had to convince a few ministers without names and really putting pressure.
Right. So you know, they had never heard of the Giro, like perhaps many of the viewers of this of our discussion, because bicycle racing is largely a European sport, but everybody's heard of the Tour de France, but how many have heard of the Giro d'Italia? And I will like to say something amazing about Israelis. So maybe 2 days before the Giro arrived in Israel, I would say 98 or 99% of Israelis had never heard of the Giro d'Italia. And amazingly, we had 1 million people come out into the street and watch the race. So this, you know, this demonstrates the enthusiasm. Once they knew we were going to be on the world stage, the world was going to be watching us, Israelis responded in an amazing way that I don't know any other country on earth where people would do.
Yeah, people really went into it. I think it also brought a lot of kids into the sport, right? I mean,
yeah, well, no question. So kids who watched the Giro, you know. It's now 6 years ago. They saw that they saw the best riders in the world, the best cycling athletes in the world, and of course that we had a huge growth in cycling. It's the fastest growing sport in the country right now, and it's well on its way to becoming one of the major sports like soccer and basketball. So I'm very proud of that. You asked me about the ministers. So again, because nobody had really heard of the Giro d'Italia when I brought the project, I had to explain to them the size of the audiences that it attracted. So everybody understood that. So I got cooperation, but not of a financial nature that I would have expected. I had this crazy idea that, you know, I'm bringing you this beautiful project, and since I like it so much and I believe in it, I will pay 10%, and I figured the government of Israel would pay 90%.
Minister of Tourism, for sure. Yeah.
So what happened was just the reverse. I paid 90%, and Israel gave me 10%, and they told me at the time that it was the largest amount the government had ever put into a sporting event.
Wow, amazing. Look, I know you for many years, but I still have a question because I don't know, when did your passion to bicycle started? I mean, where did it come from?
Yeah.
Yeah, not many people can say they're many times world champions of bicycles.
Just to clarify, I'm four-time
world
champion, but world masters champion, which is amateur. So I've never been a professional. And in fact, I started bike racing at the age of 41.
Wow.
And I've managed to do very well. I've collected 9 Canadian championships. I have 9 gold medals at the Maccabi Games. I have 4 world championships. So, you know, I've done very well in the sport for somebody who came to the sport late. I got the bug,
at 41.
It's a sport. What's interesting, it's a sport. It's an endurance sport. So it's something like running. You don't need to, it's not like tennis where if you haven't picked up a racket at age 5, you will never be a good player. You know, you have to have grown up with it, and you know, the created the neural pathways for a skill sport. No, cycling is an endurance sport, and so it you need different talents. And I happen to have a natural affinity for endurance sports. Not that I knew it, because I never did endurance sports as a kid. But you don't, you know, it's not, you don't need to have such a specialized skill set as skill sports. And so I was able to take this up. I had always played sports as a kid, but after university, where I played team sports to a fairly high level, after university, I kind of gave up my sports because I had to, you know, I was building my professional career, my business career, and raising a family. My wife and I have 4 children. And I didn't really have time for all of that stuff. And I came to it. The reason I came back in my early 40s is because, you know, I had more time on my hands at that point where I could actually devote some time to myself and to doing a sport. And as I said, I discovered that I was pretty good at it. And I've beaten Canada's greatest cyclist, Steve Bauer, who was second at the Olympics, who wore the yellow jersey at the Tour de France for, I believe it was 11 days. So he's really a great cyclist. Well, he can't keep up with me today. So that's that's the thing. You know, you can come to the sport later, and I'm competing against age group, people my age. So that's where I've had that success.
No, that's amazing. That's really, really amazing. You know, maybe a little bit share with us about you're doing a lot for Israel. You established a foundation with Margaret, and you're doing a lot of things in different arenas. Maybe you can share with us what motivates you. How do you choose your projects? I mean,
yeah. So, you know, we talked about some of these entertainment projects.
Cultural.
You mentioned Madonna. So that was in the context of Israel having earned the right to host the largest song competition in the world, the Eurovision. And it was by virtue of our contestant, Netta Barzilai, winning the previous year. So the rules are that the country of the winning contestant gets to host the Eurovision. And so I thought, well, this isn't even though it's the biggest competition in the world, It's perhaps not as well known in some parts of the world because it's a Eurocentric competition. And by the way, there are very famous winners like ABBA won it, and Céline Dion also won it. So very people who went on to big careers. But it's perhaps not as well known, let's say, in North America. So I thought by bringing a real superstar that we would attract more attention. And sure enough, I brought Madonna, and she did a cameo appearance. And it was by far the most watched edition of the Eurovision in its 50-some-odd year history. And we had about 280 million people tune in. So it was a real success.
Again, putting Israel in the center, in a good way.
So it's
not in the bad way.
It was done in Tel Aviv. One of the things they do is they do little vignettes on the host city or the host country, and so we were showing off the beautiful aspects of Israel to a very large audience.
Amazing, no, definitely amazing.
So I did, you know, as I said, I did a number of these things. We hosted at my invitation the championship game of the French soccer league. So it's called the Trophée des Champions. And we had the world's most famous soccer player, Lionel Messi, come to Israel and play the championship game in Bloomfield Stadium in Tel Aviv. Again, about 400 million people watched that game. And that doesn't even count the social media followers of Messi and Neymar. These are the famous names in that sport. And so again, it happened because of COVID. So the French soccer league was playing to close stadiums. So I approached them, and we were allowed. We had opened a little earlier. Remember, Israel was cutting edge when it came to COVID, which is another great thing that we contributed to the world. We were the world's lab for Pfizer, and so we were opening up much more quickly, and so we were allowed to be in stadiums. And I approached the French soccer league, and convinced them to play their championship game in front of fans rather than to an empty stadium. And it was a great success once again.
I remember that. I was there. Amazing, really amazing. A great experience for any sport lover. I mean, to have those people in Israel
and showing off, as I said, a different side of us. You know, And appealing to people who are not political. I call them the silent majority, people who aren't interested in polemics, who don't know that much about us. But if pressed, would probably have a negative opinion of Israel because of the things that I mentioned before, the haters, and the negative media coverage that we generally get. So here we were, showing a different side to sports fans, music fans, fans of any kind of cultural activity, and showing off Israel as a normal liberal society.
And if I remember correctly, you're doing also an amazing project you did with Ichilov, with Sorosky Hospital, and also with the Save the Child's Heart, and amazing, touching projects.
So I support three hospitals here in Israel. At Ichilov, we built the largest and most modern emergency ward, literally in the entire Western world. So I'm very proud of that. And of course, you know, we're at war now, and so many people have been brought through that emergency ward for triage and sent to the various departments. So it just changed the experience. The whole experience is much more streamlined, and it's a much more pleasant experience using technology and using AI to send the patients to the right place and to get the best possible outcome. So I'm very proud of that. At Wolfson Hospital in Cholon, and Cholon is known as the city of children, Ir HaYeladim. And so I built a children's hospital.
Amazing.
There. And the Save a Child's Heart program that you mentioned, we do life-saving heart surgery on children from underprivileged parts of the world, including 2 days a week, Palestinian Day. And we had kids coming from Gaza with their families, with their parents, and with their doctors, and being greeted by Arabic speaking personnel at the hospital and saving their kids. And, it's so tragic to think about October the 7th and the war that we are facing, because all we've ever tried to do here in Israel is extend our arm, our hand, to try to bring a positiveness to our neighbors. Yeah. And sadly, they have been misled. The poor people of Gaza and in general of the Palestinian territories, instead of spending money and emulating Israel and sending their kids to university and trying to encourage them to do productive things, both for themselves and perhaps even for the outside world, they built tunnels. So we built towers of universities, and they built tunnels. I mean, they took the money. Both Hamas and the Palestinian Authority, they're kleptocracies. They take the generous money generously donated by taxpayers of Western countries, and they use it for nefarious means, or they steal it and they become billionaires. We heard about how the two Hamas leaders, Haniyeh and Meshal, living in Doha, Qatar. One is worth $4.6 billion. The other one is worth $3.6 billion. And they just stole the money, and the rest they built tunnels. They used to build tunnels. And the people of Gaza just suffered. Man. And are facing our onslaught, because we have no choice. We have to make Israel safe. It is the duty of our government and our IDF to make its citizens safe. And we are facing a very bad, again, hostility from journalists who regurgitate the propaganda, including, let's say, the casualty figures, which they're just nonsensical. They just throw out figures and they call, say, the Gaza Ministry of Health reports that there are 30,000 Gazans dead. And they talk about women and children, and they never talk about combatants. We know that about half of those killed so far have been terrorists, and nobody's sorry to see them leave the earth. And we haven't finished the job. And again, they've built under people's homes, and they've built, you know, I was told by returning soldiers who have spent, let's say, 100 or more days in Gaza, I was told there isn't a house there that doesn't have a tunnel shaft, armaments, ammunition, and paraphernalia of war. Yeah, so you know, this is a tragic situation. But we will win, because we have no choice.
We will.
As Golda Meir said, we don't have any other land. Ein lanu eretz acheret.
Legamre, absolutely. I want to, you know, maybe we can discuss this, and then I want to end with the SASE, with your institute and university. But I know we talk about 7 October, the Black 7 of October, and I know we talk about unity. I know this is something which is very important for you, specifically the unification. We talk about unity in the Jewish world, talk about Israel. Just a little bit about your views about that, and then...
So, funnily enough, you know, we had, of course, big demonstrations about the judicial reforms. But I would say that 70 to 80% of Israelis agree on just about everything. Literally just about everything. Of course, we vote differently. So some vote for this party, others vote for another party. Personally, I am agnostic as to which government I work with. I have to work with all governments when I was doing my big events. And I get along with everybody, and I get along with Haredim, I get along with the left, the right. People ask me, Sylvan, are you left or right? Journalists would ask me this question, and I say, I'm Zionist, you tell me. So we actually get along. Unfortunately, we sometimes focus on what divides us, and we had two temples destroyed in our history, and we never seem to learn that when we are divided, this is when we are most vulnerable. Sure. And at a very, very high cost of the slaughter, the massacre, the torture, the mutilation, the rape of our women, the absolute horror of and cruelty of October the 7th. In the aftermath of that, it has brought us closer together, both as Israelis and I would say Jewish people worldwide. And I like to say in the diaspora, where I grew up, where my children reside, where my grandchildren are, I like to say that there's more interest now in Jewish day schools than in many, many years. And what Hamas succeeded in doing, they made a mistake, because Jewish pride is back.
Yeah.
And they united us. As I said, the cost was too high. But let's not lose the unity that we have today. We are so much stronger, and we are invincible when we are united.
Absolutely. I totally agree with you. Maybe the last thing I want you to tell us or share with us, you established in Tel Aviv University, first in Israel, the Sylvan Adams Sports Institute. We call it SASI, one of a kind. It's also very special because you're also the owner or established the best or the only team, cycling team in Israel, right? So just maybe the connection and what drove you to come to the president and establish this amazing institute.
So it's an amazing field. Sports science, and like when the Americans decided to go to the moon, and there were so many other spin-offs from that endeavor of going to the moon, when John F. Kennedy challenged his scientists to reach the moon. And so many of our inventions, modern inventions, came from that. Well, likewise in sports science. So not only is it virtuous from the perspective of becoming a super nation in sports, and I have this challenge. I think we've won 12 medals in the history of Israel. I would like to see us win 12 medals in a single Olympic Games. I meant Olympic medals. So I think that the Institute can certainly support it. And Israelis are winners. We win at everything that we put our minds to. We win at high tech. We win at agriculture. We win in so many areas. Why shouldn't we win in sports? We are winners. And all we need is the right infrastructure, the right tools. But in addition to that, there are many, many, it's the science of sport and pushing the boundaries of human performance that can also have spin-off effects for our health, for the health of the general population, and finding ways for us to live longer and live better and healthier lives. So it's something that was a passion of mine. Now, it didn't exist anywhere in Israel. And I proposed it to the president of the university, and received a positive answer. And so I'm excited. We're open on a low scale basis right now. We will open the institute will open once the new building that we've constructed is completed by the end of the year, and we will be up and running. And we also have a hypoxic hotel where athletes can go and sleep at simulated altitude, where they reduce the oxygen in there and it simulates altitude so that it boosts
also red, first of its kind in Israel.
Yes. Red blood cell growth and enable our athletes to achieve on a very, very high level around the world.
Amazing. Look, Sylvan, all those are amazing, and I want to thank you very much for coming here today and speaking.
I just want to finish the thing about the bicycle team.
I'm sorry. Yes.
So
go ahead.
It is the first professional cycling team from Israel. We compete at the highest level. We compete in the Tour de France. Of course, we were in the Giro as well. We compete every year in the Tour de France. We've won stages in the Tour. We employ the greatest champion of this era, Chris Froome, who won the Tour four times. And he won the Giro. He won the Vuelta, the other Grand Tour. And I also built the first velodrome in the Middle East, which is a track cycling stadium. And we have already, after just 2 years, we've got athletes. I said that we are winners. We have athletes who are world ranked. And we're going to try to win a medal in Paris for a look. We are an emerging cycling nation. As I said, I put the sport of cycling on my back, and we have the athletes, we have the horses to do it. And I'm really proud of everyone. And again, the team's name, this is also unique. Most teams have a commercial sponsor name, so people will know Lance Armstrong's team was the United States Postal Service. Well, my team is called Israel.
Wow.
So my brand is Israel because I'm the self-appointed ambassador. So they carry Israel on the front of the jersey, and something very, very interesting happened. Because we are competing at the highest level, there is a bike race called the Tour of the UAE. And 6 months before the signing of the Abraham Accords, when there were office discussions being held, diplomatic discussions between the politicians, my team went to the UAE and we competed there, and with Israel. We rode in the streets with Israel. And, you know, not only did the people not object, we had Emirati children waiting in line to receive a souvenir water bottle with the name Israel on it.
Wow.
And I was told by the American peace negotiators that this was noticed by the leadership of the UAE, and it helped create the conditions that led to the signing of the Abraham Accords, because they saw that there wasn't a natural hostility to Israel. On the contrary, we were welcome enough. And I said prophetically at the time, little did I know, I said, you know, one day when our leaders, you know, it's clear that we're making people-to-people contact, but one day when our leaders find the conditions to have a peace agreement, we will already have set the conditions. And I was honored to be one of the very few Israelis to be invited by the American administration to Washington to witness the signing of the Abraham Accords. So it's validation of my activities and making me feel really quite good about it. And as I say, our Israel team, we travel all around the world. Cycling takes place on 6 continents. We have professional bike races. And we carry the name Israel. And again, when I'm at the Tour de France, I hear the people shouting on the sidelines, "Allez, allez, Israël, Israël!"
Wow.
And you know, it gives me goosebumps because you know, people think that France is hostile to French people are hostile to Israel. It's not the case, and I can tell you the silent majority, and this is really important. The silent majority that I mentioned earlier, they're with us, and even in the post October the 7th, they understand what we face, notwithstanding the way the media is portraying the war. The silent majority is with us.
Wonderful. So with that, Ambassador Adams, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure. I'm sure our viewers and listeners were deeply interested. And thank you for what you're doing for Israel, not only for Tel Aviv University, for the future.
Thank you.
We're looking forward for many, many more things.
Thank you, Amos. Thank you.
Daruba.
Thank you.
Thank you.